Hello everyone. This is part of a series on Disney and race. We want you to know that in doing this series, it is not our intention to talk over the voices of Black creators. I am white.
But I am Latino and bring that perspective as a non-white person to this conversation. However, we know that our experiences are different to those of the Black community. We also know that our audience is mostly white. It is to that audience that we speak and hope to educate.
Please do not consider us the authorities on race or the Black experience. However, as allies to the Black community and the Black Lives Matter movement, we could not in good conscience let this time go past without giving what we could to the cause.
Thank you for listening. We hope what we have to offer is entertaining, but moreover, we hope it is educational for those that need it.
And now, our feature presentation.
I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. We've been Disney fans our entire lives. And now, as childless adults, we're undertaking a journey through the media that shaped our lives.
Trying to find out if what made them special is still there.
We are Rewatching the Magic.
Hi, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday.
Back again. This will be, we are still continuing our little our mini series on Disney and race. This will be the last one for now, let's say, because there are so many movies that we can cover in this series. And yeah, what would you say about that?
Yeah, just so that you know, if you've been listening to the show, first of all, thank you. But if you've been listening to us kind of through the whole thing, you know that we've never really shied away from these political topics, and we're going to continue that. I mean, we will talk about these topics when they appear in movies. We felt that given the current situations with the Black Lives Matter protests that are going on as we're recording this, they are still going on, although the media has stopped paying attention to them. We'll continue to talk about these topics, and if you don't like that, there's other podcasts you can listen to, but we will talk about what we feel is important, and we feel that these things are important.
This week, the movie we're talking about is Pixar's A Bug's Life, the first Pixar movie we'll be talking about on the podcast.
Yeah, and we did intend, I mean, full disclosure, we did intend for our first Pixar movie to be the first Toy Story film. However, we thought that this topic kind of, you know, preempted that.
Yeah, especially since at least two or three scenes of this movie kind of started circling around because of the Black Lives Matter movement, because of certain scenes. And we'll talk about those scenes when they come up. So yeah, this movie, Kiki, are you familiar with the story of the ant and the grasshopper?
I am familiar with most of Aesop's fables. Why, yes.
So, yeah, this is definitely based off that story, or at least inspired by it. For those of you who may not be familiar with the story, the grasshopper plays around while the ants are gathering their food for the winter. Winter comes, the grasshopper has no food because he's been playing the whole summer, and the ants kind of take pity on him. Disney actually covered this in one of the early Silly Symphonies, and it was one of my favorite Silly Symphonies, because they got the guy that played Goofy as the voice of the grasshopper, which I loved.
Yeah, 1934 that was.
The tale itself could easily be taken multiple ways. Kindness to strangers, always be prepared for situations. Those stories were always meant to inspire more than one lesson. And Pixar took this very well-known fable, and they made this movie. This is their second movie that they ever did. And there's so many themes in this movie that can apply to so many parts of what's going on in the world right now. You have the obvious racial tones between the grasshoppers and the ants. You have a bit of, not to get into the story too much, but you have the ants saying that they are the protectors of the ants. And if they don't fall in line, well, who's going to protect them? That has nothing to do with what's going on in the world right now.
Yeah. You have the strength of the few versus the power of the many.
Yeah.
You could take it as a capitalism allegory. pretty much any type of exploitative power imbalance you could almost overlay this story on.
And that was the beauty of, like, the original Pixar movies. Yeah, a lot of them. Toy Story, Monsters, Inc., even A Bug's Life, you know. Even Finding Nemo in some places. That you can kind of see so many themes that you could take from this movie that really, really, that's what made Pixar such a popular animation studio, even outshining their Disney partner.
To the we haven't talked about it too much, a little bit, but during the kind of dark period after the Renaissance, the experimental phase of 2D animated Disney, Pixar really became known as a contender, and of course it wasn't entirely meshed with Disney for part of that.
They weren't owned by Disney yet. They were just using Disney as a distributor.
But they became known not just for their groundbreaking computer animation, but also for, like, their really deep storytelling, which was something that Disney had kind of stopped doing. The Disney films of that time were at least perceived to be slightly more shallow.
Yeah, we're making... They really were going into the dumb kids movie kind of phase. A lot of people were assuming that.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about a few of those films and how that is not always the case.
No.
With those. But that was the public perception at the time, that Pixar was doing kind of deep, slightly older stories that could still be enjoyed by all ages, and Disney was kind of playing to the cheap seats almost.
Yeah. And also, this was also during the rise of DreamWorks.
Also a big part of the rise of DreamWorks, to be honest. This was right after Katzenberg had left.
Yeah, Katzenberg had left Disney, forming DreamWorks. And, well, let's get into it. Let's get into that thing, the controversy involving this film.
Yeah, because we got to talk a little bit about Steve Jobs, because we haven't really mentioned his contribution as much to Pixar, but Pixar was one of Steve Jobs' pet projects when it first started, before it was bought by Disney. And of course, before the passing of Steve Jobs, but it was bought by Disney before that. And Steve Jobs and Jeffrey Katzenberg did not really like each other that much.
And especially when, at the same time this movie is coming out, DreamWorks comes out with a very similar movie, Ants.
Yeah, it was spelled with a Z because it was the 90s and that was how we rolled. Yeah, and the thing is that Bug's Life, you know, coming off of the success of the first Toy Story, everybody was really looking at Pixar for what they were going to do to follow that up.
Yeah, what was going to be the follow-up?
And so everybody had their eye on A Bug's Life. You know, it started out with, like, well, it's going to be about bugs. And then it was like, well, it's going to be mostly about ants. And then, you know. So there was a big kind of kerfuffle when DreamWorks was like, hey, and our movie is going to be a computer animated thing about ants. And then everybody was like, you sure you want to go with that?
Yeah. I mean, there has been talk that, I mean, it takes a while for these movies to get made. And even before, you know, pen to paper. So the general assumption was that Katzenberg may or may not have heard something about Pixar doing a movie about ants when he was leaving and passed the idea to DreamWorks. That is the general rumor. Whether it's true or not, no one will ever know.
Yeah, but the thing is that this is not an unheard of thing in Hollywood for people to get wind of a studio is doing something, you know, with, I don't know, aliens or whatever, and it's going to be sort of this, and then suddenly every studio has an alien movie.
This is not the first time it's even happened to DreamWorks. Not even DreamWorks. Not the first time it's ever happened to Pixar. Because Pixar actually scrapped a movie called Newt about a newt that's trying to mate and continue the species, which is a very similar story to Blue Skies Rio. And when Rio came out, Pixar was like, yeah, we got to scrap this movie. This is the exact same movie that these guys are doing. So we got to scrap this.
Yeah. So
and now Blue Sky's owned by Disney because they bought Fox.
Well, yeah, true. Remember, everything will soon be owned by Disney. I will give DreamWorks credit. Like, if it is as seems probable that Katzenberg took the idea and was hoping to make a rival film.
Or at least beat it, get their movie out before Pixar could get their movie out.
Yeah. There are differences in the film. It is an overall plot of there's an ant, he doesn't quite fit in with society. There's an ant princess, he wants to be the princess's boyfriend or whatever, and he helps save the entire ant colony.
And both are voiced by well-known comedians.
Yeah, but Ants was tonally a very different movie.
Mm.
They really went down because, unfortunately, and while we are talking about a lot of men with unfortunate histories in this episode, and I apologize, but they're all involved, Ants starred Woody Allen as the voice, and so because of that, it plays almost like an animated Woody Allen film. It is very wordy. A lot of jokes that think they're more intellectual. I'm not really going to say they are, but, you know, that kind of humor. Much more fast-paced in the dialogue, and much more given to satire. Whereas Bug's Life was, you know, here's a lot of goofy, pretty colors, here's a lot of puns that kids would enjoy. There's stuff for adults, but Ants was like, there's a lot of jokes in Ants that are like, how did you get that past a censor?
Woody Allen. The
yeah, because it's Woody Allen. I mean, why would you put Woody Allen in a kid's movie? And, you know, he wasn't quite the persona non grata in the 90s that he is now, but it wasn't like people weren't already kind of catching on to that. So, that's where they went with it. Bug's Life has problems of its own. You want to get into who's in this thing?
Well, we talked about well-known comedians playing lead. Dave Foley of The Kids in the Hall as Flick.
Yeah, and at the time, as you will see a lot in this cast, they really just cast a bunch of sitcom stars that were really popular at this point in the 90s.
And probably cheap, too.
Well, yeah, a little bit, but they didn't go for, like, second stringers, really. All these names were kind of at the top of their game at this point.
Well, yeah. Would you call it stunt casting?
Yeah, I would call this stunt casting. It's not quite as egregious as, like, here's Robin Williams, you know. But, you know, Dave Foley was on TV every week in news radio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, moving on through the cast, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, of course, was on Seinfeld, which was the biggest thing on TV at the time. Mm-hmm. Richard Kind was in Spin City. David Hyde Pierce was on Frasier. Brad Garrett and Everybody Loves Raymond. I mean, these people were on in your house every week.
Yep.
So even though it wasn't like the super mega, you know, multimillionaire box office draw, this was for the adults thinking about, do I want to go with my kids to see this? This was like, hey, here's comfort food, because these are all the voices you hear every week in your own house.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it is stunt casting, but it wasn't quite stunt casting to draw from the names. It was more, we're trying to sell this movie, but when the adults look at it, they're going to recognize these names. Because these were all adult sitcoms.
Which really is what most of these movies at the time was going with their casting. Like, yeah, it's a kids movie, but let's give the adults a reason to be there.
Yeah. And I, for the most part, really liked this cast. They really went heavy on either comedians that were on every week or reaching back for some comedians who maybe, I don't want to say past their prime, but they wouldn't have been as known to the children audience, but they would have been known to the parents or the grandparents. Phyllis Diller as the queen, who
she's just playing Phyllis Diller.
Yeah, she's just playing Phil. Most of her roles at that point were just, hey, we need somebody to be Phyllis Diller. Why don't we get Phyllis Diller? She was one of the first female stand-up comedians that really hit it big. And so pretty much every female stand-up since then, all the women that followed after, you know, Joan Rivers and Ellen DeGeneres and whoever, they all walked in, you know, Phyllis Diller's footsteps. So she was nearing I won't say nearing the end of her life. She lived for about another 10 years or so. But, you know, she was not performing as much at that point. They went and got Roddy McDowall in his final film role. You know him for starring as both Cornelius and Caesar in the original Planet of the Apes. He was also in other Disney movies before. He was in That Darn Cat. He was in Bedknobs and Broomsticks. He was in Black Hole. So he has a long Disney career by this point. And this was, unfortunately, his final big screen role. He was playing Mr. Soil in this one. We also, we talked about Bonnie Hunt last week.
Yeah.
She's also in this as the Black Widow Spider. We have Madeline Kahn, who you will remember a lot from working with Mel Brooks, Young Frankenstein and High Anxiety and Blazing Saddles and History of the World Part One. You know, she's, a legend. I mean, good grief. And she is in there as a moth with a very unfortunate name. I'm going to say it once. She is Gypsy the Gypsy Moth. And that is a type of moth. And that is where she got her name from. And I will not ascribe any malice to that name choice. That's just...
Flames at the top of my face. Heathen grunt. Sorry.
Yeah. So we had to get a Clue reference in there at some point too. Yeah. We've got John Ratzenberger, who was also in
Every
Toy Story,
other Pixar movie.
And every other Pixar movie at the point. He was the
good
Pixar
luck
good luck charm, yeah. But one that I kind of wanted to talk about because I had forgotten he was in this movie and he's amazing is Jonathan Harris, who most people will know from Lost in Space. He was Dr. Zachary Smith in the original Lost in Space series. Very
the pain of it all.
It's, oh, the pain, William. Yeah. And the thing is he's known for that very over-the-top British accent. Do you know where he was from?
Where?
The Bronx.
Good actor.
Well, it's just apparently when he was a little kid and he was listening to the radio and stuff like that, I actually heard him talk about this in person once because somebody, when they found out in the audience where he was from, they were like, then why do you talk like, you know, a 1940s English film villain? And apparently he just did not like his Bronx accent and he decided in high school he would just have an English accent and nobody stopped him. So he went for the rest of his life, and as far as I know he did that in public and in private. I don't think after he made the change he ever went back to his original accent, but very fascinating man.
That,
unfortunately,
that reminds me of several friends of ours who are from different parts of the country, different parts of the world, who just did not like the accent of their specific region and just decided, I'm going to change my voice because I don't like it.
One of them might be on this podcast.
Yeah, well, I wasn't going to say it, but okay.
I don't mind. But yeah, so he, like an unfortunate number of this cast, has since left us, which is very sad. One last interesting thing in the cast is we've got Hayden Panettiere in her first film role as Princess Dot.
Save the princess, save the world.
Yeah, and I didn't remember that this was her first film role because the last time I watched this movie, I had no idea who Hayden Panettiere was.
Yeah, and there's another one. I'm going to just mention it. Some of our other, if you're a younger listener, you might know the name Ashley Tisdale. She does have a small role in this movie, but so most people might know her as Sharpay in the High School Musical series. So she does have some Disney cred.
Yeah. So I didn't realize that's who she was, but yeah, I'm not fond of that character, mostly because I had to spend a season in Chicago selling High School Musical Halloween costumes to very annoying children, and the most annoying of the children always wanted to be Sharpay.
Sharpay was the one that got the spinoff movie. I wonder if we'll get to that.
Oh, don't make me. All right. So, yeah, the most part, good cast, but we do have to talk about the one elephant in the room in the cast, unfortunately.
Kevin Spacey as Hopper the Grasshopper.
And I'm going to be super honest with you. At the time this came out, he was probably the reason I went and saw this movie.
I mean,
came
out around the same time, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it came out a year after this, but either way, I was a huge fan of his at this point in time. I mean, and I will give him the credit that he is an incredibly talented actor. I wish he was as good a person as he is an actor. Maybe he could try acting like a good person. Maybe it'll stick. But yeah, so it was a big, huge draw. That was probably the biggest name. I mean, easily the biggest film name at the time.
You don't want to see Dennis Leary as a ladybug?
Yeah, we didn't talk about Dennis Leary, but there's another comedy one for. And, for those of you who always loved, Whose Line Is It Anyway? You got Mike McShane. You might also know him as Friar Tuck in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. So.
Yeah, I think that's all we can say about the cast of this movie.
Yeah, good cast minus the one glaring exception. Okay.
All right, so let's kind of get into the story. So we begin our story. The ants are collecting food, berries, seeds, small foods that ants would eat in this big collection for the grasshoppers to come because they have their deal that the grasshoppers... They have enough time to get all this food for the grasshoppers. The grasshoppers grab their food, and they're gone, and they never see him for the rest of the season. Flick, played by Dave Foley here, is an inventor, and he wants to find a way to have them gather food faster with his inventions. And they always fail, which honestly, it's a trope in these kind of movies. And
the inventor is always the inventions never work at the start of the film.
Yeah.
We saw that of course with Meet the Robinsons as well. You know, but he was of course a little child.
Yeah. And yeah, because of his inventions, the food bowl stage thing is knocked off and just falls into the water, the little ocean, because they're on an island, you see.
Into the river.
Is it a river? Yeah. They call it an island. It just probably is a little speck thing. Anyway, it's gone into the river. It's gone forever. And now the grasshoppers are mad because their food that they kind of forced the ants to gather for them is not there. Yeah. So now they're angry. They threaten the ants and saying, you know, we're going to give you a chance to redeem yourselves. Give us twice the food that you were already gathered by the end of season, by fall, by the end of summer. And they'll go through the same thing. Even at this point, you kind of see because Hopper is now threatening Dot, the tiny baby princess ant. She has a little bit of a friendship with Flick. He kind of stands up to the grasshopper saying, you know, let her go. She's like, it's just a kid. Let her go. And they do let him, they do leave, but that thing of someone actually stood up to him kind of burns within Hopper throughout the rest of the whole movie. But because, you know, now what have you done, Flick? What have you done? You know, you've already had the ants mad at us because you got rid of their food. Now they're mad at us because they're thinking we're starting some sort of revolution.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that I do want to say something about Hopper's ultimatum here. Mm-hmm. It's sort of set up, not entirely explicitly, but you do get the idea that for the first half of the harvesting season, the ants harvest half the food on the island and give it to the grasshoppers. Mm-hmm. And then they spend the rest of the season before the rainy season harvesting the other half of the island to feed themselves. So when he comes and says, you have to give me double the food, Hopper already knows, one, that will leave no food for the ants, and two, even if they give him all of their own food, this is an unattainable
goal.
Metric. Like, they will never be able to meet this goal. So he is already setting them up to fail. So when you see the ants going like, well, maybe if we'll give him what he wants, he'll go away. We know that he already knows they can't do it. And the ants know they can't do it. So this is already a lose-lose situation.
And this is the part where we actually, like I've said earlier, where the grasshoppers say that they protect the ants from all the other insects and whatnot that come to the island, and that's their payment. You know, the idea of, here's a person that is supposed to protect us that is threatening us.
Yeah.
Put that analogy to anything. When I was a kid watching this movie, younger person, not really a kid, because you and I were already in high school when this movie came out.
Yeah.
I saw it more like a mob boss, like we protect you for payment kind of deal. But looking back at this movie, yeah, it really does connect to the events of the modern world.
Yeah, and also we find out pretty quickly in the movie that this is a lie. Because where do the grasshoppers live? Pretty far away from this little island by bug standards. Because it takes them like half a day or a day to get to this island when they finally come back.
Mm-hmm.
They're not protecting anything. They only come to this island once a year, take all the food, and then leave. They don't actually know what's going on in the island. The ants have never left this little island, which, if you haven't seen the movie, is big enough to house one tree. It's a tiny little crop of land in the middle of a river that is big enough for one tree. But of course, to the ants, this might as well be a continent.
Yeah.
And the grasshoppers we see live in a kind of desert land relatively far away from this tree.
Mm-hmm.
So when the grasshoppers are like, give us food and we will protect you, they're not actually doing anything, and they have no intention of doing anything. But the ants don't know that because they don't know what lies beyond their island.
And one thing I do commend the movie about is that they actually go with actual bug lifespans, because there is one scene where a fly says, I have 24 hours to live and I don't want to waste it here. So who knows how many generations of ants and grasshoppers have done this thing and how long that's been in actual person years.
Yeah, I don't know. They keep saying seasons, and we assume that's a year by human standards.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe... I mean, I don't know. I'm not a bug expert. I'm not an entomologist, but...
If you're a bug expert, please contact us. We would like to know. Anyway, so... So the council of
Google says approximately 1 year for a grasshopper.
So they are fudging the bit with this, unless seasons actually mean like the summer season, the winter season, and whatnot.
But that's
still a year, yeah. We're fudging it then. I guess Pixar is fudging it then, because I guess it only counts for the flies.
Yeah. Wow. According to Google, a black garden ant, which I'm assuming these are, they look kind of like a typical garden variety ant. The queen can live up to 15 years.
Huh.
So they are fudging the numbers with maybe... Hopper hasn't been around for that long, but it's possible.
Well,
that...
they do mention Hopper. It's Hopper's mother, so it's possible that Hopper's mother was the previous tormentor of the ants.
Yeah, we don't know, but ant queens apparently can live for over a decade, which is fascinating, and I would have never guessed that.
So Phyllis Diller's character is about 15 years old.
Yeah. So
yeah, let's move on to the council here. The princess and her council pretty much are go with I'm getting ahead of myself. They're trying to figure out what to do with Flick, because he's messed up twice in one day.
Yeah, he almost killed the princess.
Yeah,
and he ruined the offering for the grass.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. So three times. By also ticking off Hopper.
Oh, yes, and also making it worse with Hopper, yeah.
Yeah, so he's already messed up three times in the first half an hour of this movie.
Yeah.
Way to go, Flick. Way to go, Protag. Yeah. Anyway, so they're trying to figure out what they're going to do with poor Flick, and Flick is starting to think, well, they're really big. If we're not that big, if we had bigger bugs, we can beat them up. We can get our winner freedom. So he comes with the idea of he's going to go find bigger bugs to fight the big bugs that oppress them. And they are straight up, he is not going to do this. This is an impossible mission.
We're taking bets on how long he will live.
But it gets them out of their hair just enough so that
their antenna.
Yeah, they can get the food together and hopefully smooth things over. Even, as you said, it's an impossible task that all parties involved know. But they're going to do what they can because they want to survive. They want to live. And we finally... It's kind of funny because you also see after Flick starts on his journey, the other ant kids kind of having bets on him. My dad says he's going to die.
Yeah.
It's like... And the only one who really believes in him is Dot. And we kind of see... Kind of going back here, we kind of have Dot learning to fly or trying to fly earlier in the movie, and her wings are so small because she's a baby ant. And Flick kind of inspires her, like, you know, you're just a seed now. You're not a tree yet. And it's a very funny thing with a rock and analogies and pretending. And words cannot describe this scene. You have to see it, really.
I love how literal Dot is.
Yeah.
There are a lot of parts in there where Dot kind of reminds me of Lilo.
Oh, yeah.
From Lilo and Stitch, and how very literal she is and how focused she is. And I mean, if you wanted to look at Dot and perhaps see a neuroatypical child, I think that would be an accurate reading.
I would say that.
Not quite getting a hold of metaphors and things like that. I love Dot. I love everything about that character. She's such a good character.
Yeah, Dot's an amazing character, especially, you know, towards the end. So yeah. That kind of ends act one of this movie.
Yeah, Flick is off to Bug City, which they have heard of, I guess.
Yeah, that itself could be like a series, just Bug City.
Yeah, Bugtopia.
Bugtopia. That would be a better movie.
If it was done by the writers of this movie, maybe. I love the idea of passing bugs have told these ants about Bug City, like, we're on our way to Bug City or whatever. But that the ants are too, one, scared by the grasshoppers, and two, given to, this is the way we have always done things.
Which, as someone like yourself who lives in a small town can attest to, that, you know, we're not leaving this town, this is our town, this is how we've always been, generations lived here, and we're going to stay here, kind of thing.
Yeah, the interesting thing is that Flick is slightly different in that his entire reason for being in the movie is not to necessarily leave the colony. He just wants to make things better for the colony, and he's open to leaving if that's what it takes. But he's not like Belle or something that's like, oh, I'm stuck in a small place and I want to leave. So off to Bug City we go.
Yeah, off to Bug City we go. And, there's a lot of bug jokes in this whole thing of, you know, see a mosquito with a Bloody Mary. There's the flies, the fly flying into the buzzer.
Interesting.
Don't go into the light. I can't help it.
Yeah. I was going to bring up that scene because I don't know how it was at your school and among your friends. But that one, like, don't go into the light, I can't help it. That was the most quoted thing of 1998, I think, among my friends. Like, for about 3 months after the trailers and the commercials for this started coming out.
But that scene, yeah.
That was all. That or Bloody Mary O positive.
Yeah.
Interestingly, I was going to say as a quick aside, the most of the clips for this movie in the trailers and commercials came from this Bug City scene.
Yeah.
Which is, what, 5-10 minutes of the movie tops?
Yeah.
I mean, this is a very small portion of the overall movie. And it was about 90% of the advertising. So not quite as bad as Meet the Robinsons with the "Did I get a big head and little arms?" But almost that bad.
Yeah.
In the way that this movie was advertised.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's move on to the second story of A Bug's Life, the circus performers.
I absolutely love the joke of the flea circus.
Yeah.
And I absolutely love the joke that he is named P.T. Fleet.
Yeah.
And it's P.T. Barnum.
P.T. Barnum.
Not a great guy. You want to talk about exploitation and racism? Please look up the actual history of P.T. Barnum. And maybe not any musicals that may have been loosely pretended to have been based on his life. Anyway.
Yeah. Want to review X-Men at some point? Moving on. moving on. The Bug Circus in their little Casey Jr. cracker car, which I loved as a kid because I always liked Casey Jr. crackers.
Yeah, I love the little animal cracker box, and you know that it's turned into the kind of wagon for the design of this movie is beautiful. The way they use both natural and like human garbage elements, repurposed into the existence of these bugs is so good. I love everything. You know, Flick makes a telescope out of a leaf and a drop of dew. So many good things. And I really bravo to the production design team that figured out all these cute little jokes.
Yeah. Oh, forgot what I was going to say.
Bug Circus.
That's what I was going to say. Casey Jr., a Dumbo reference.
Yeah.
There's a little Disney reference there. And, so the Bug Circus isn't going too well, because the flies who are all in the audience are pretty much crapping off the entire show, because they're kind of messing up most of their acts. They're well-known acts from, they're trying to tame the bug, and they end up hitting him, and he starts crying.
Yeah.
And
it's not a very good circus.
No,
it really, really isn't.
And I mentioned the flies, but the flies, with the exception of the bird, the flies look the most to their real life counterparts compared to the other bugs in this movie.
Yeah, the character design is kind of interestingly all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to make them look realistic, or do you want to make them look cartoony?
Like, they went cartoony with the ants, but then some things, like the rhinoceros beetle, looks a little more realistic. The flies look, like, really disturbingly realistic. They tried with the bird to get a more realistic-looking bird. The grasshoppers are a bit more cartoony rather than realistic. It's kind of all over the place. They also didn't apparently do a lot of research, because, I mean, we've already discovered the one thing with the lifespan of a grasshopper versus the lifespan of an ant queen. And also, the type of moth in this movie, the female moths do not fly. They have wings, but they are incapable of flight. So the fact that it's a female moth who is flying around, bit inaccurate. So, you know, some of it's better than others.
Let's get this one out of the way, the one I know that you hate. Heimlich. The entire movie is just him as one big fat joke.
Yeah, a German fat joke on top of that.
Yeah.
Which is its own subset of weird. Apparently this was like the one person in the film who wasn't a professional voice actor. We didn't mention him before because he's not really a voice actor. He is one of the writers of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And also of Toy Story. He was co-director on Cars.
Mm-hmm.
So this was apparently he did the scratch track, which is what they do to the early animatics before they get the professionals in. Mm-hmm. And he apparently they liked his version of it, so they just kept him in and had him re-record the things.
That's how our friend Kyle got on the show, on his own show.
Yeah, and honestly, I do believe they said Lindsay as well did some scratch tracks, and they kept her on. So, yeah, I mean, it's valid.
Yeah, good friends, Kyle and Lindsay Carosa, from a bunch of stuff, Mighty Magisaur, Solar Opposites, and stuff like that.
Yeah, it is a valid way of becoming a voice actor, and there are several people that have taken that. We've just named two, but... he is kind of the one that was more there for, you know, writing and animation. Unfortunately, he, like a lot of the cast, has since passed. It was a car accident in his case. He didn't die of age related. And has since been named a Disney legend. For his work, because he did not only worked on this, but he worked on Beauty and the Beast and Lion King and Brave Little Toaster, even, you know, so he was already pretty embedded in Disney by the time that he went over to Pixar and did this.
Yeah. And let's talk a little bit about Tuck and Roll, the Hungarian brother. Yeah.
I love them. I'm not sure that I like... I have a complicated history with kind of fake foreign characters.
Especially when the entire joke is they don't understand English.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really lazy joke, and I wish that we'd kind of stop. You know, even Andy Kaufman found some depth with that, you know, like maybe think a little harder, but they do come off as interesting characters in a way, even though it's still kind of a lazy joke. I do kind of enjoy the pill bugs.
So, yeah, and everything goes wrong at the circus until the Flame of Death. They try this trick where the pill bugs are trying to go into fire with the flypaper, and again, it all goes wrong. But apparently, yeah, it all goes wrong, and
it leads to P.T. Flea ending up getting, like, immolated.
And he fires his entire crew because, you know, like, you're all fired.
Yeah. Interestingly, apparently that was the first sequence to actually be animated. So.
Honestly, if you're going to animate anything, that's not, like, it's probably one of the more complicated scenes in the movie.
Yeah, and also they thought that joke wouldn't change or evolve in any major way, so they wouldn't have to redo it later if there were story changes, because it was a single joke. But yeah, I actually like this scene, the whole setup. It introduces all the circus characters very well. You see the older magician and his wife.
Interspecies marriage.
Yeah, interspecies marriage, because they are said to be husband and wife in this. Mm-hmm. You see, we haven't really talked about Dennis Leary as the ladybug, but you see Francis and all of his issues with being misgendered. You see the Black Widow Spider and all of her issues with trying to get her timing right, and also how she's kind of a, I don't know if you call her a maternal figure or like an older sister or whatever to Dim, the rhinoceros beetle.
It's implied that it's a trainer relationship, but it's, she definitely cares about him.
Yeah. And you also get that, one, none of them are very good at their jobs. Also, David Hyde Pierce, sorry, I gotta mention him, because he is playing every David Hyde Pierce character ever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly, it's just like, I want to be a great thespian, and you have me do it. I mean, it's basically, you know, Sideshow Bob's brother.
Yeah.
It's like, except not evil, you know, it's like, but yeah, he's playing basically every David Hyde Pierce character up until this point, and a few that came after it. But you kind of see that they're all bad at their jobs, and you see why they're fired from the circus, and why they end up drinking sadly in a bar in Bug City.
And this is where the stories intersect, where Flick is trying to find some warrior, but he finds the bouncer at the bar. Turns out he's only big and puff when he's has some blood in him because he's a mosquito. Hence yeah. the old Bloody Mary joke. So, I mean, getting a bouncer at a bar to defend yourself would be a good idea if he could stay pumped, you see.
But and also, it's suggested, even though it's a kids' film, so, you know, they don't really want to go into it, but it's suggested that in order to be big and pumped, he also has to be drunk.
Yeah.
Because of the way he kind of passes out and falls off his chair after having his Bloody Mary.
Yeah, so anyway, the intersect, but he actually overhears the circus folk going into a bit as they're trying to defend themselves, or at least scare off the flies who are offended that Francis is not a girl.
Yeah.
And they go into a Robin Hood act, saying that they are the greatest warrior bugs in the world, and Flick completely misunderstands this. Thinking that they actually are warrior bugs, and then, you know, your typical misunderstanding, things go one way or the other, and it looks like our circus bugs has literally beat the crap, because they're flies, you see, out of the flies, when it was just an accident that the bar tipped over because it's a can.
Yeah. While we're talking about this scene, can we talk about Francis for just a second?
Sure. Let's talk about Francis.
Because, and of course, I am not a member of the trans community, so I don't really, you know, speak at all for that community, and am willing to be have my mind changed if anybody wants to take exception to this. But if you're going to have a joke about a man being misgendered for supposedly feminine traits, one, maybe don't. I mean, I would have just preferred maybe not. But honestly, this is about as kind of portrayal as could be expected, I guess, in the 90s.
Yeah. I mean, the whole, oh, it's a ladybug, but it's not a lady. It's a kind of an, even at this point, it was kind of an old joke.
It was, but I'm really, like I said, while I would have preferred for it maybe to not be the storyline, I'm kind of impressed they didn't go worse with it. And in fact, Francis's entire story arc starts out as there are things about him he worries maybe, and as we see with the flies, are perceived as feminine.
And I mean, Francis, he even has the big girly cartoony eyelashes that every cartoon girl has.
Yeah, that even in the animation, they draw him with kind of traditional feminine characteristics, like the eyelashes. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, like, you know, dude looks like a lady is a horrible joke, and I wish they would stay away from it. The story arc is actually not Francis has to prove himself a big, tough guy so people will stop thinking of him as feminine. It's actually Francis has to let go of his toxic masculinity and realize that there's nothing wrong with more feminine traits, like being a caretaker for children.
Yeah.
Which I find an interesting, I wouldn't call it a complete reversal of the trope, because there are still some problematic areas of it. But it's a much better moral than most people at the time were going with this same setup.
Which is a lot, considering this is a character voiced by Dennis Leary.
Who was not, at the time, known for his kind of... I think now we've softened a little bit on Dennis Leary.
Yeah.
But at the time, Dennis Leary was kind of the poster boy for that kind of traditional toxic masculinity of, you know, I eat meat and I smoke cigarettes and I drink straight booze. And
he wrote an entire song calling himself an a-hole.
Yeah. Which is a hilarious song.
His entire persona was he was a dude bro before.
Yeah,
there was,
I'm a man.
Before that term even existed.
Yeah, I'm a manly man. With
and even by his own admission,
that was,
by his own admission, even his own, in some of his own stand-up special, like it's an act, it's a character. I'm not actually like this way.
Yeah, but I think a lot of his work in more recent years, and maybe this was one of the first ones he did, has been a little bit more, like Rescue Me. He was a bit more toned down in that sense, that he was a bit less a bit sexist and weird and stuff like that, you know. But now I think he's kind of softened his image in that sense. But at the time, he was the absolute epitome of that trope. So I found that very interesting, because with somebody like Dennis Leary, they could have gone a much worse way with it, but despite the problematic elements of the joke itself, I think the moral of Francis's story kind of ends up being okay. Like, it's okay to not be angry and yell at people and threaten to punch them all the time. You can be both a man and a caretaker.
And nurturing.
And nurturing and, you know, kind. And I do like that aspect of the story, even though I don't particularly like where it started.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's one of those things that there's a bad, but there's also a little bit of redemption in there.
Yeah, Still there?
Okay, moving on. That was, I just wanted to have a little talk about the Francis.
Yeah. Flick, he thinks they're warrior bugs. He goes through the whole thing, and they think it's an audition to be a stage performance for ants. They go to perform for ants, and yeah, you know, the whole, again, it's a trope in movies of lack of communication, people misunderstanding things. Yeah.
This is why you always get a contract. Come on.
And of course, the idea that the pill bugs don't speak English, and there's Flick telling them the entire story of the movie up to this point, and they don't speak English, so they have no idea what he's saying.
And also it uses the word talent. I think you're very talented to bugs or something, and they mistake that as he's a talent scout.
Yeah.
So they agree to go back to Ant Island.
And they finally, and when the big thing happens, when the ants kind of go with the idea of, oh, they're going to be, by having these children stage a very, very violent play about how ants are going to kill grasshoppers.
We drew one of you dying because our teacher said it would be better. It's so bizarre.
And it's so much like a kid, though.
Yeah, it is. It is very much like a kid. That's the one thing I love about this movie, is not only did they get kids to be kids.
Yeah.
But the kids talk and react like kids as well.
Yeah.
And I always like that in a movie. I want to see kids being kids. And that's not to say, like, unintelligent or completely naive or whatever. I mean, kids understand, we talk about this almost every episode, kids understand more than you're giving them credit for, but they don't talk and react exactly like adults.
Yeah, that's a big problem with a lot of movies that feature kids is they end up talking like tiny adults rather than talking like children.
Yeah. So anyway, I love that this movie actually lets the kid characters be kids, which is great. Bravo.
Yeah, and they... Yeah.
And this little play that they do that absolutely horrifies the circus bugs, where the little kids are going like, I'm dying! So cute and so very much a, like, yes, a kid would think this is a good idea, but it's absolutely horrifying at the same time.
Yeah, and so they have to kind of tell Flick of what's going on. I think, yeah, this is not what we agreed to. You think we're warriors, we're just circus performers. And yeah, like, oh, I messed up for the fourth time in this movie.
Yeah, pretty bad. This one may be the worst one yet, Flick.
And but that ends up leading to Dot kind of doing what Flick did earlier by riding on a sunflower seed. Dandelion seed. And kind of getting in trouble with the bird we've mentioned before. Very realistic bird, especially for early Pixar.
Yeah, we can talk about the animation a little bit later, but yeah, for early Pixar, this was a fairly realistic bird.
And they go through this big thing of course, the ants think, oh, this is all their, this is the plan, this is their big plan, and most of it's messed up, it's just that it's messed up in a way that it worked out in the end. Then, you know, the Princess Dot is saved, but, you know, everyone thinks they did it on purpose. It was just, you know, it wasn't supposed to go that way, especially with Heimlich getting stuck.
But I do like the fact that when they come back and they're like, oh goodness, you know, we've dodged a bird and now we're leaving, and then they hear that noise.
The noise that they're not used to hearing. The noise that
every performer craves.
Applause.
Yay!
Can you imagine? Well, we've known a lot of performers that don't usually get a lot of applause.
I am a lot of performers that don't usually get a lot of applause.
Unless it's karaoke night. I've seen you at karaoke. You kill. But outside of that, not so much.
But yeah, I love that, you know, and of course that's kind of a, you know, a Hollywood joke of that's the only thing motivating a performer is just they want more applause. So they're like, oh yeah, we'll pretend to be warriors. Sure, we'll go along with it. Just keep applauding for us.
Yeah, and this is where Francis breaks his leg.
Francis is up getting his leg broken trying to save Dot.
Yeah.
And is in a cat. I mean, I felt this because I'm still, my ankle is still messed up, so I was kind of propped up in much a similar way watching this movie.
Have we mentioned
that
on the show yet, that you injured your ankle?
I'm not sure if we have, but yeah, at the beginning of June, I injured my ankle on the 1st of June, and I have been basically laid up ever since. So,
good thing we're in quarantine still.
Yeah, good thing both my job and my podcast can be done from the comfort of my bedroom. But so I was basically in a much similar position to Francis while watching this movie.
This is where we talk about the caretaker. He kind of is becomes the honorary den mother of the little scout troop that Dot's a part of.
Yeah, like, what's it called? The blueberries or something?
The
yeah.
Blueberries. Which is, you know, a nice little kids' troop name, the Blueberries.
Yeah, and I love it. I love kind of that whole little group that is in there. It's so cute.
Move on here. So Flick comes up with the idea of, well, you're not warriors, you can't fight them. Maybe we can scare him off, because it's mentioned earlier in the movie that Hopper is afraid of birds because he's a grasshopper and birds tend to eat bugs.
I mean, all bugs are probably terrified of a bird.
But it's implied that he was attacked by a bird. We even see one of his eyes is scarred up. So it's possible that that happened from a bird. It's never said in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's reasonable to assume.
So he has this thing about birds. So let's make a fake bird, and we'll have him swing through when the grasshoppers come, and it'll scare him away, and we'll be safe.
But how do we make a fake bird? Well, fortunately, Flick's an inventor.
Yep. And they spend the rest of the summer, instead of gathering the food, building this fake bird.
Well, the thing is, though, is that they have already gathered the food. Before Flick comes back with the warriors, we do see the ants talking about the fact that they've basically gotten all of the food from the island.
Yeah.
They are tapped out. And the thing is that if you see the mound of food that they have there as the offering to the grasshoppers, mm-hmm. versus the amount of food that is on that same rock when they say, you know, we can't find any more food, we're, you know, we've picked the island clean, you kind of get the idea of this is how little the ants have been subsisting on, and as the grasshoppers say later, the ants outnumber them 100-1 easily.
Yeah.
So you get the sense of just how bad it has been for this colony for however long this is going on.
Yeah. However long it has been.
Because it's not even a third of what they offered the grasshoppers at the beginning.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they're building the bird. Let's talk about the grasshoppers in their little desert, torturing flies, torturing mosquitoes, listening to La Cucaracha with actual cockroaches.
Yeah.
That is one of the funniest jokes in the movie, is cockroaches doing La Cucaracha.
Yeah, I did like that joke as much as I hate both cockroaches and also cockroaches, which are, hilariously, the reason why I've injured my ankle. it's the fault of a cockroach that I injured my ankle, so all cockroaches can die forever, thank you. Anyway.
Which is the main reason I wanted to do this movie, is this scene.
This scene has become a meme again in light of the protests.
You let one ant rise up against us, they'll all rise up against us. It's not about food, it's about keeping them in line. Sound familiar, guys?
Yeah. And this is the point where we understand explicitly, I mean, we've already gotten an idea of how thin the grasshoppers' ploy has been this entire time, the scam they've been running.
Yeah.
But this is where they explicitly lay it out. They have more food than they need.
Yeah.
And we see that they have stores of grain more than they need to feed themselves. We only ever see, what, maybe a dozen grasshoppers?
Yeah. And they even say so. We don't need to go back because we have all the food we need. And even said, and then Hopper even tells it, it's not about food. It's about power. It's about keeping the ants in line to show them who's boss. Again, people with more than they'll ever need taking things from other people. Again, this is so, so relevant right now.
And like we said earlier, intersectional.
Yeah.
This is very much, it could be a race thing easily. It could be a boss and an employee. It could be just capitalism in general. It could be any sort of exploitative relationship.
Yeah.
And, you know, okay, let's go ahead and talk about it. We talked about, me especially talked about, how I did not think that Zootopia worked because the racism was an interspecies racism. Okay, you had one type of animal fearing a different type of animal. And I said then that I thought it would have worked better if it had been the same species of animal having bigotry. Well, this movie does the same thing. It's grasshoppers and ants. Mm-hmm. They are not the same species. However, I think this works a lot better because while they are the same sort of species, grasshoppers and ants almost never have any sort of like predator-prey relationship, or I mean, ants will eat dead grasshoppers like nobody's business, but
they won't kill them.
Yeah, it's not, there's not really like the great universal struggle between ants and grasshoppers. Like it's not really a thing. Maybe they'll compete for resources. You know, if the grasshoppers come in and strip the grass and the ants can't get anything or whatever. But generally, I'm not even sure how much they're in competition for exactly the same thing anyway. But what this does do is less, you know, there is some bigotry from the grasshoppers in that they belittle the ants. You're lower than dirt. At one literally point, they talk about yeah, your, you know, but the thing here is power dynamics. Is that one group has gotten used to another group does all the work, we reap all the benefit. And in order to do that, we have to keep them in their place.
Yep. It's our way of life. You know, it's again, so, so relevant right now.
Yeah. And the belittling and the othering of the people you are exploiting is a tried and true method of doing that.
Yep.
So unlike how I felt in Zootopia, I feel that the kind of, they're two different species, but the racism metaphor still works a little bit better in this one. Because it's more about power dynamic than it is specifically about racism. Like I said, you can kind of overlay this story onto several different societal ills. Mm-hmm. Which I think works better than what Zootopia tried to do. So yeah, we did you find it weird that the grasshoppers apparently just live in a sombrero next to a cactus in the middle of a desert?
Yeah, where did this make this somewhere in Mexico maybe? By the Gulf?
Or maybe the Southwest US?
Maybe.
You know, somewhere along the border. I don't know which side. We do see, the only other real human element we see is the really crappy trailer that Bug City is in the garbage pile next to.
Yeah.
But we don't see a single human. And we don't
see
any...
Do we see a Pizza Planet truck? Because this is a Pixar movie. We need a Pizza Planet truck.
I'm not sure. I actually don't know, and I didn't see it in this one. But I like that we don't really see any humans, and the only thing we see is the house of one of them and the kind of garbage left by humans.
Yeah, there's a lot of human things that the bugs are using for their own,
yeah,
for their own world, and it works. It's fine. I do want to do a quick aside of Hopper's brother. His dimmer, constantly shedding brother.
Oh, yeah. While we're on Pizza Planet, the Pizza Planet truck is parked next to that trailer.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's where it is. We see it at nighttime, so it's kind of difficult to see in a quick shot.
Because, you know, it's not.
But yeah, let's talk about Hopper's brother.
Yeah. This little, I mean, he's, again, you can kind of say it's another fat joke because he's kind of a chunkier grasshopper. He's a bit meeker. He almost tries to be a voice of reason, but his brother's just bullying him. It's like, if I didn't promise mother I wouldn't kill you, I'd kill you.
But you know what? Like I said about David Hyde Pierce, this is just a Richard Kind character.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure he's playing a character at this point other than generic Richard Kind character.
Yeah.
He plays a lot of this type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, he's called Molt, and his thing is that he's molting the entire movie. Until the end, where he's literally scared out of his molt.
I'm not entirely sure that, I'm not entirely sure that I read Molt necessarily as a fat joke much as they just drew him to kind of look like Richard Kind.
Maybe.
They don't make a lot of jokes about, like, him and eating or whatever, but, yeah, it is in there. It was the 90s and fat jokes were everywhere.
Anyway, and the fact that Hopper straight up killed three of his own men to prove a point.
Yeah, are we assuming they're dead? Because they seemed pretty maybe dead. Because I don't know. He just says, like, let's go, and the whole group leaves. And yeah. We never see anybody dig them out of that pile of grain.
I assume the mosquitoes and flies and cockroaches have to pick up all the grain and put it back in the bottle.
Probably. But I do love that metaphor. While we're talking about it, I think the reason that scene has become a meme again is for Hopper's metaphor of the individual grains.
Yeah.
You know, you hit somebody with one grain, it's tiny, it doesn't hurt, it's fine. But thousands of grain little kernels all together is an avalanche that, again, we're assuming that they killed these guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, the same thing would happen to a human, you know, if a whole silo of grain, you know, fell out over you, you'd suffocate in it, you know.
I throw a rock at you, it'll hurt, but it won't kill you. But
I mean, depending on the size of the rock.
Yeah.
But yeah, like a little pebble, it wouldn't, but you drop a ton of pebbles on my head, I'm going to die, yeah. So I like that metaphor, and it's a metaphor that a little kid can understand too. So when you're talking about explaining things to children, I think this does it way better than, well, like last week with Zootopia.
And in the real world, the ants figured it out.
Well, we're seeing it. It's looking more hopeful.
Yeah.
But already in our relatively short lives, I guess you could say, you know, I remember a few other times when it kind of, and I was a part of a few other times when I thought maybe this is it.
And then it stops being popular, it stops being trendy, and it goes back to the way it was.
Yeah, and so as much as I want to jump on the bandwagon of be like, yeah, this is change, I've been burned a few times, and I'm not sure. I'm hoping.
That's all we can do is be hopeful.
I'm hoping, and I'm working toward that, and I'm trying to keep people focused on these things, but, you know, I'm just one seed.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a tree. So I don't know how much I personally can do, but I'm doing everything I can find to do.
Yeah, that's all you can do is do what you can and be cautiously optimistic about the future.
Yeah, I mean, we're still hoping. Speaking of the future, how do things turn out for these ants?
Let's move on ahead, because the ants are kind of celebrating as the grasshoppers are about to get there. And a lot of the circus folk have their little trope jokes, you know, the stick bug is a limbo stick, and the Black Widow spider is talking about her dead husband, because she's a widow, you see.
And then my 12th husband. Yeah, I love that.
Francis actually starts playing around with the scout troops, teaching them how to play cards.
Yeah.
I'm losing. He lost to the kid.
I have no idea how you play Canasta, but I don't know if it's an appropriate game to teach to a kid or if it's too difficult. But
I'm guessing that they couldn't say poker in a kids movie.
Maybe not. Yeah. The 90s were really, I mean, I'm sure your school probably had something similar, but my school outlawed any cards. Trading cards, playing cards, magic cards.
This was 98. This was like the height of the Pokemon phenomenon.
And also Magic the Gathering. This was the big swell of when Magic the Gathering became popular, and that was, you know, it depended on kind of which subset of geek you were in at the time, which one you were doing. But yeah, and the interesting thing is that they banned all these things for gambling. Pogs, too.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, because some kids got upset because they lost their pogs in the game that you would play and the other person would keep your pogs and that's how you would trade them. So they banned all that sort of thing for gambling, which was fascinating because about half of the things they banned, you know, there was no inherent gambling element in it. You can gamble on a game of Magic the Gathering if you want. You just like you can gamble on literally anything. You can flip a coin and bet money on that. Mm-hmm. But there's not an inherent, you know, poker is kind of an inherent betting game. You might play for pennies or tokens or something if you don't want to use actual money, but that is kind of the point of poker.
Yeah. So let's keep going. We'll be talking about card games for another hour or so. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Flick tries to, you know, hey, this is your chance for the circuit sport to get out, and they're gonna stay because they've actually gotten attached to the bugs. You know, Francis is kind of warmed up to being a scout leader. You know, they all want to stay and help and fight the grasshoppers because they now believe in Flick.
Yeah, they've gotten to know the ants of the colony, and it's not just, this is the other good moral of the story, I think, is that the bugs come in, and they're like, there's the ants, and then there's us. You've got two distinct groups, the ants and the circus bugs, mm-hmm. and they make this kind of small alliance, but by the end, you just have one group, really. You just have the grasshoppers and the people fighting the grasshoppers, the bugs fighting the grasshoppers.
Again, nice analogy to what's going on right now. It's, you know, it's allies together with a common oppressor almost.
Yeah, and even if the oppressor, you know, the grasshoppers were not oppressing the circus bugs.
No.
The circus bugs are complete.
They're strangers to the fight.
Yeah, they're strangers to this situation. However, they do see that there's an injustice here, and they see that they have a lot in common with the people who are being oppressed.
Yeah.
And they decide that even if it puts them in danger, they've got to stand up and stop the oppression, because it's the right thing to do. And it's never explicitly stated in the film that that's why they're doing it, or that that's the moral of the story, but it's very obvious that's the moral of the story.
And even Flick and, the princess start to have a little bit of a thing going on, because kids, you know, you kind of need that love aspect of these kind of movies. It's sweet, though.
I think it would be until like Frozen before we got a Disney movie that didn't have that, like, you know, overt the main character has to fall in love.
And there's a cute moment where their antenna get tangled up.
Yeah.
So, you know, everything's coming up Flick. until P.T. Flea comes in wanting his performers back and completely blows the whole thing up. He just, these are circus performers. They're not warriors. This is, you know, they're showmen. They are a complete cluster of an act was so popular. Everyone wants us to do it. So we're going to do the worst circus ever when I'm going to get set on fire and it's going to be wonderful.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to say, I like the fact that the flea gets set on fire and still survives, because if you've ever had to deal with fleas, you know that like nothing kills those little suckers. But, this is one of my least favorite tropes in all of the storytelling. Mm-hmm. You know, you lied to us. We will never talk to you again. Please leave.
Yeah.
And the thing is that, yeah, they did lie, but at the same time, like, that plan's a really good plan.
And, but they, then of course, the princess, everyone is throwing it all, throwing the whole thing away because, like, lie, they're not warriors, they're circus performers. Oh, but your plan with the bird, it was Flick's idea of the bird. And then they hate Flick because, oh, now we thought this idea was a great warrior idea. Now it's the Klutz's idea, so we're not going to do it.
Yeah, which, you know, not a smart move, you know, for that. I understand it on an emotional level, but, you know.
Because the plot says so, pretty much.
Yeah, and I always hate this, like, end of the second act, like, you have betrayed us, leave! You know, it's just, it's annoying. I understand why it's done, but it's still annoying. So, anyway, the colony kicks out Flick and all the circus bugs, and they all decide to go back with P.T. Flea in his little cookie wagon.
Yeah, even, you know, they're trying to make the bite of it. Oh, hey, Flick, you'd make a great circus and circus performer. You know, you can join our troupe, blah, blah, blah. And, like, he's just completely depressed. It's like he messed up for the fifth time in this movie. And he's just so completely, like, everything I do, I fail at. I'm a failure. Probably thinks he'd be a failure as a circus performer, even though that's kind of their gimmick now.
He's now convinced the bird would have never worked because he came up with the idea.
Yeah. And like this whole movie, the only person who believes in him is Dot. And Dot, trying to find Flick, the only person in the colony that believes in him. And, you know, her arc comes full circle as she's actually able to fly. Struggling, and with all of the strength in her body, she's able to fly to Flick and find Flick and try to bring him back. Because, like, your plan can work. I believe in your plan. Even bringing back the rock as a seed metaphor, which she never finishes it because she doesn't need to for Flick, but the circus performers have no idea what's going on.
It's, yeah, like, all they see is just Dot bring up like a tiny little pebble and lay it down, and then Flick's like, I'm back on board. Let's go back to the colony.
It's like, you know, you have two friends who have an inside joke, and there's a third person who's kind of new to the group and who doesn't get it at all, but it doesn't understand why these two people are laughing about it.
Yeah, but it works.
Yeah.
It snaps Flick out of it. He realizes that somebody does, in fact, believe in him.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Dot comes with a horrifying message.
Oh, yeah, we kind of skipped over that part. That her and her troop, hiding from the grasshoppers as they come, overhears that they're going to kill the queen after they take all the food.
Yeah, they're going to squish her as a show of strength and a reminder to the ants in order to keep them in line and keep them scared, so that next season they can do this again.
an oppressor putting their leg on the head of someone.
Yeah, there's some pretty interesting imagery of, you know, the foot on neck kind of stuff here that, you know, when you think of it that way, it's very difficult to watch, but it's also kind of exactly this right.
This movie is now more relevant than ever.
Yeah, unfortunately so.
Yeah. So, yeah, the pep talk from Dot gets flicked back in the game.
And the idea that they are going to murder the queen, who everybody likes because she's Phyllis Diller, and of course you're going to like her.
It's like, you know, it's like the fun grandma that cooks. It's like the neighborhood grandma that cooks all the kids cookies. Yeah. Then you find out that she's sick. Oh, no, not grandma.
Yeah.
And they freaking tie up poor P.T. Flea.
Yeah, in the web.
Yeah. And hijack the circus car to drive back to the colony to save the queen, thinking up a plan with their expertise as circus performers.
And I like that they also pick up the other bugs that work for the circus, which are the fireflies.
And the worms.
And the worms, yeah.
They have to be worms, because we already have a caterpillar in this.
They're like millipedes.
Yeah, millipedes.
Yeah. So like, drives the little car.
Even joking that P.T. Flea doesn't pay them.
Yeah.
I promise I'll start paying you.
No, he promises to think about paying them in future.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and the fireflies with their little spotlights. Spotlights attached to them, so it looks like a big blinding thing. I don't know if those actually come off, or those, like, P.T. kind of super glued them onto their butts. I don't know. There's a nice little joke of turn your butt off so they don't know that they're coming.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the grasshoppers are there. We did skip over that the grasshoppers did come and are, you know, terrorizing the people. They're going to, you know, steal everything. But, yeah, yeah, now they're...
The grasshoppers have a plan to draw this out as a lesson to these ants. Because at this point, Hopper has decided it is not good enough just to go there, take their food, and leave. He wants to sit there and eat every last morsel of food on that island and make the ants watch him do it. And then at the end, unbeknownst to the rest of the ants, he is going to kill the queen. This is a grand show that he is putting on for the ants. He is making them serve him food. He is making the princess and the queen sit next to him at a, like, dinner table kind of thing as he and the grasshoppers eat and the ants do not. Mm-hmm. There are so many power moves that he is pulling out here in order to belittle the ants and make them, you know, feel their place.
Yeah, learn your place and all that. Again, that can be used for so many different things.
Yeah, and it's an excellent metaphor. And once again, it's not really drawn specific attention to in the movie. Mm. That this is exactly, you know, the... You know, in human culture, we would call this a dehumanization move.
Yeah.
You know, you will bring me every morsel of food in your house and watch me eat it in front of you, knowing that you are going to starve. I mean, that's a heck of a torture technique.
Yep. I don't need this, but I'm going to take this to make sure you don't have it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's... Even for a kid, that's a sign of a bully. A kid watching this movie who has no idea what's going on will see that's a bad person doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the kid who, like, oh, you know, your mom sent a cupcake with you in your lunch today. I'm going to take that cupcake and eat one bite and throw the rest on the ground.
Yeah. Mom's cooking sucks.
Yeah, your mom's cupcakes are awful. You know, like, yeah, it's that kind of thing.
oh, your mom made you this for lunch? Bleh. You know.
Yeah. Let me lick it and then, like, put it back on your plate. That kind of thing.
Yeah. Anyway, so, yeah, Flick goes and he recruits the Blueberry Troop to fly the bird. Because they're the only, they've hidden and they're the only ants that hasn't been rounded up by Hopper.
Yeah.
So, I love
the group and I love their little secret headquarters inside the stalk of the plant. It's so cute. I love it.
These little ants are so cute. And I love the fact, we didn't mention it, but they actually changed their colors to be ladybug colors in honor of the ladybug.
In honor of Francis, yes.
Francis. Yeah, I was going to say Ferris. Francis. Yeah. Wrong character.
The little ladybug cape wing things that they all start wearing. It's so adorable.
And at first, Francis is kind of annoyed by it, but he kind of sees it as a nice little term of endearment.
Yeah, and it's a sign of respect.
Yeah. You're wearing this person's colors.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they finally get in there. They do their thing. They get in there, start their little troop, you know, and they say that, oh, the queen invited us as entertainment for the grasshoppers.
Yeah, an extra special treat just to get on your good side. And the princess goes along with it.
Yeah.
Of course I did.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did.
And Hopper is not into this. Hopper wants them to go away. Until the pill bugs start to fight in front of him. And Hopper thinks that's hilarious. That slapsticky...
Slapstick comedy violence.
Yeah, comedy violence kind of thing. Of course, that's going to appeal to the bully.
Yeah.
So he decides to let them stay and figures it's an extra thing as he and his...
Dinner time entertainment isn't all that bad.
The food.
Know? Yeah. So... And this is all part of the plan, as their plan is to do the whole disappearing magic act with, and as a random person in the audience, they choose the queen to do the disappearing act. And it works, but now Hopper doesn't have the queen anymore. Where's the queen? Oh, a magician never reveals his secrets. Where's the queen? And, you know, which is the signal for them to release the bird. And they do release the bird, and it actually works. The bird works. The bird is scaring off the grasshoppers. They're running out, especially Hopper, who is scared to death over this bird, who he's going to finish him off after taking his eye.
I love that all the, that Slim, the stick bug, shoves a berry into his eye and starts screaming, oh no, my eye, it took my eye, and then other ants are like shoving berry juice onto their heads and pretending it's blood and like pretending to die. It's so good.
It's right in front of Hopper, who again, as I said, has a scar over his eye. So like that's some PTSD thing or something.
Yeah, I guess, but I mean, understandable if so, but still. Yeah.
Go ahead.
How much everybody is playing this up, because you see the moment when the bird, the fake bird, starts to fall out of the tree and all the ants look up, and at first they're just like, wow, it's working. And then one of them is like, oh yeah, we're supposed to be playing this up. And then he starts running around screaming, and then all the other ants are like, oh yeah, right. And then they start running around screaming.
We forgot the bit.
Yeah, we forgot that we're part of this. And I love the coordination of all the blueberries working together to make the bird flap its wings, and Flick being the pilot and, you know, of the bird. It's a great little bit of teamwork, and it's animated wonderfully.
Until P.T. Flea escapes. Doesn't know the plan. And goes with the flame of death to the bird. Because it's made of leaves. It burns. And they crash.
And fortunately, all the blueberries make it out all right. But,
yes, because this is a kid's movie, after all. Because
it's a kid's movie, and we can't have little children horribly burning to death inside of a
Trojan. And of course, yeah. Because you needed the bird to fail just to get the... the villain one more last hurrah, as it were.
Yeah, the final showdown with the villain.
Yeah. Because you need that in these movies. Yeah, so he's angry. He thinks it's the kid's idea. He's going to, you know, kill Dot because he thinks that she's the leader of the kids and the kids came up with the idea. But then Flick comes up. The bird was my idea. Because we're going to stand up to you. And Flick just starts, Flick gets the tar beaten out of him by Hopper. Because again, this is the bug, the little ant that stood up to me earlier. I'm going to teach a lesson. I'm going to make an example out of him. And let it be a lesson to know you're beneath us. You need us. You serve us. And then you get the big her hero speech from Flick. Like, no, we're strong. We're stronger than you. We gather food for you. You need us. We don't serve you. We don't need you. You need us. And it's the words of inspiration.
Well, and he has one final kind of punctuation on that, which is what seals it for everyone else, which is, and you know it.
Exactly. I like how I like the animation on that. Like it's at that moment, looking at Hopper's face, like, you know it, don't you? You know we're stronger than you together. You know that if we all stood up to you, you don't have a chance. Again, this scene right here is another one that not as shared, but has become a meme in this current environment. It's like the many versus, you know, the many going up against the oppressed. It's a beautiful scene, honestly. And I have new respect for this scene, honestly. Because I thought it was a corny scene as a young person watching this. But now it's like, oh, this is actually pretty good.
Yeah, and it's... I like the moment when the rest of the colony decides to go. Because Hopper is still fighting for that last little bit of that, you know, no, you're still... horrible, weak little things. And then the ants just link arm and arm.
Yeah.
And with the other bugs.
And someone mentioned this, that it is pretty much the protest that's going on. So it's not just black people protesting. It's white allies. It's gay allies, trans allies, Latinos, Muslims, all forms of life coming together to say that Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
Ant Lives Matter in this sense.
Yeah. And it is such a powerful little... And they don't say a word. They just have the visual speak for itself.
It's beautiful, honestly.
It is gorgeous. Just all of these thousands of ants linking arms and just standing there in defiance. They don't stand there for long, of course.
No, because they fight.
That's the other half, you know? Knowledge is half the battle. The other half, question mark, but I'll let you fill in the blanks.
It's almost, rewatching this movie, it reminds me of the portal scene from Avengers Endgame.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm, you know, maybe I'm strange on that one, where you see all the heroes coming together to fight Thanos and his squad. This is all the bugs coming together to fight the grasshoppers.
Yeah, and like we said, you only see maybe a dozen grasshoppers the entire film. Mm-hmm. It's probably less, but maybe
12 minus 3.
Well, yeah, but I mean, at most, we've only ever seen like 12 grasshoppers in this entire gang. And like I said, they're probably down a few members. And then it's just this sea of ants pouring over.
Yeah, fighting back. There's more of them, and even the circus performers get into the fight with their skills, but they're getting into the fight. And the best thing, because we haven't mentioned it, was their savage grasshopper, who they kind of used as a sicking dog.
Yeah.
An attack dog. And Dot just straight up slaps him in the face. No, bad grasshopper.
Yeah. No, I said no. Yeah, just kind of treats like a dog or whatever. But
and of course the rhino beetle right behind it, kind of backing her up, kind of scares him off.
Yeah, Jim shows up to kind of save the day. But you know, bravo to Dot for kind of doing that.
Yeah, and it kind of worked for her character too.
Yeah, girl's got gumption.
Yeah,
a lot of cojones in that little ant.
Cajones, lady, cajones. yeah, but yeah, and they actually, and of course you get the comedic scene of Molt getting scared out of his entire dead skin.
Yeah, it's just molts right out of his skin, yeah.
And that's the payoff of that joke for the whole movie.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they win the, or not almost, they almost win.
Well, they drive off all the grasshoppers except Hopper, yeah, who they capture and decide they're going to shoot him out of the cannon.
Until it starts to rain, because that was the whole point. The rain season is coming. You know what happens when with bugs in water, unless you're a water bug. It doesn't end up too good for ants in water.
Yeah, and I wish the rain effect held up a little bit better.
It's an early Pixar. It's only their second movie.
Yeah, this is a 22-year-old movie. I was like, when I did the math on that, I was like, oh, I feel so ancient.
Again, this movie came out when we were in high school.
Yeah, which I was reminded today was 22 years ago.
We are old.
But
the thunder effects are actually pretty good.
But the interesting thing is that it's interesting now because we're looking at some of these things, some of these textures and animations and stuff of the time. And at the time they were absolutely groundbreaking. This was the most amazing film I had ever seen. Mm-hmm. Technologically speaking. This was the best thing a computer had turned out since Jurassic Park. By today's standards, just because of the way technology moves forward, it is, you know, some of these textures and animations and tools are just available for the home market now.
Yeah, there are people who can use the same tools here and make their, and people have made their own movies on their own home computer using the same technology that made for this movie.
Yeah, and which is great that technology moves that way, but it doesn't hold up, unfortunately, in a way that 2D animation will.
Yeah.
You know, you look at even some of the early classic Disney films. You know, you look at Sleeping Beauty or Cinderella or, you know, one of those, and it's still beautiful because the technology to do seriously hand-drawn animation, not like, you know, you draw it into a computer or something, but if you actually sit down and draw frame by frame with pencils and inks and things like that, that technology has stayed static, basically. There have been a few innovations, but for the most part, it is done in the same way. Mm-hmm. And because of that, it tends to feel more timeless than, you know, we talked about it in Beauty and the Beast and in Aladdin and stuff of that. Some of that new computer animation they tried putting into the 2D movies doesn't hold up as well as the rest of the animation. Mm-hmm. And it's the same here. This is still a really good movie visually, mm-hmm, but it's also very cartoony. I know at the time when we were watching, we were like, wow, some of these are like, you know, like that bird, they really tried to get a realistic bird. Look at how those feathers move. And by today's standards, we're like, wow, that is a really badly rendered bird. You know?
It's like looking at Toy Story 1 to Toy Story 4 and how they
it's the same progression. Yeah. So bravo to the animation team, because they really did push a lot of boundaries forward. But unfortunately, because of the way technology progresses in computers, as opposed to something like traditional animation, you know, I mean, you got the short end of the stick on that one, unfortunately, but it's still a really impressive feat of the, it just looks a little more cartoony today than it felt at the time.
Yeah. So let's try to wrap this up. So yeah, the Hopper gets out of the cannon. He kidnapped Flick. The other circus bugs chased after him. It seems that they don't get they fail to rescue him. But I don't know which one he was. Tucker Roll actually breaks off one of Hop's antenna, which means now he can't fly straight.
Yeah, and Flick sort of maneuvers him into a very dangerous spot that we have seen before.
It's the bird nest from the earlier in the movie. And plays off, you know, oh, this is another fake bird we created. There's a bunch of ants in there too. Why'd you try to destroy that? Like, the other one got destroyed. Only it's not a fake bird. It's real bird. And the real bird picks up Flick. Hopper picks up Hopper, and in a very overly dramatic that would only work in a film, flies up to the baby birds and drops him, and that is the last we see of Hopper.
And honestly, this is a terrifying scene.
I would make this up with, like, Gaston falling off the castle.
Clayton
getting hanged in Tarzan.
I was thinking more Scar, because much like Hopper, Scar was eaten alive.
Yeah.
Because Scar is still alive when he gets down to the hyenas, and he is not. And yeah. Having your villain eaten alive is a very rare Disney death, but it's not unprecedented, I guess.
But we never see the eating. We just see a scream, well, a gnaw, and...
With Scar, we just see that in shadows, but...
Yeah. I do like how they've made the bird move realistic, even though the textures don't work, because the way the bird moves their head,
The actual animation movement is still great. If you just reskinned that thing with better feather textures, it would look great. But they got the movement spot on.
George Lucas presents Bugs Life Remastered. Bugs Life Special Edition.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, you kind of feel almost not entirely bad for Hopper, but you really wouldn't wish that kind of death on anyone.
That's a rather gruesome death.
He deserved it, but it's kind of gruesome.
He nibbled to death by babies. Like, wow.
Death as baby food.
Yeah.
They did not do what birds mostly do, is that birds will usually chew the food first and then kind of spit it into the baby's mouth, because their stomachs aren't... Like human babies, bird baby stomachs are not fully digested, are not fully developed yet to eat solid food.
Yeah. But fortunately, we were spared that, because that would have been a whole other level of nightmare.
Bird puke doesn't really work for a kid's movie.
Yeah. Anyway, back at Ant Island.
Back in Ant Island, everyone is celebrating. We don't know how long this has been. It's been a considerable amount of time, because now all of the ants are using Flick's inventions.
It seems like we're supposed to think it's the next season.
Yeah.
I would say. Like, next spring.
Yeah. And because it's already, you know, it's already been raining, it's probably, and they all in the anthill. So apparently, the circus folk has stayed the entire season, even P.T. Flea.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, they didn't help save the island.
Yeah.
So, you know, they probably got a lot of hospitality. I mean, I don't know why P.T. Flea is still there, but, you know, Maybe it was the rainy season and he couldn't
really go anywhere.
Yeah.
Rain and a cardboard box of crackers doesn't really go very far.
Yeah.
So yeah, now we have the queen and the other old aunt are kind of in a thing now.
I thought it was funny.
we never.
You go get it, Queen Aunt.
Yeah, really. Get yourself a man. And as the springtime comes, the circus bugs are leaving because they're going to go do their thing.
They're going to reform and do their act.
Yeah. We don't know if they're a better act, but, you know, if
maybe they've been practicing over the winter.
Who knows? And, you know, it's kind of a nice, you know, kind of a warm feeling that some of the ants want to go with the circus act, the kids.
Yeah, the blue bear, he's trying to go with them.
Yeah, and Heimlich. Yeah, one last fat joke with Heimlich.
Yeah, I did not get the point of that joke. Nothing about it made sense. That he went into the cocoon, but when he comes out, he has like really tiny wings that will not carry his weight, and the rest of him is still a giant caterpillar.
That's not how metamorphosis works.
Yeah, it's not how that works. But you got your last fat joke in there, and you can bravo.
Yeah. And I do like how Tuck and Roll are now using the last remnant of Hopper as a puppet in their act.
Yeah, I love the little antenna puppet. That was so cute. I mean, gruesome, because they are using, like, you know...
a dismembered body part.
Yeah, it's like... but, okay,
and
sure.
Molt has a new job working with the circus.
Yeah, that is interesting. Like, when did Molt come back? Because didn't he flee with the... But didn't he leave with the rest of the...
It's possible he came back after the rain subsided to try to find his brother, and,
And then when he found out he was dead, he was like, well, no big loss. Like,
you know, he was kind of an a-hole anyway.
He was it's fine.
You know, he did threaten my life a few... He's my brother, but he did threaten my life a few times.
Yeah.
So now working with the circus as they're, you know, off to do another thing. And yeah, it still bothers me the Heimlich thing. And then one last joke with the Rock as the circus people don't understand that it was just an inside joke between the two.
Yeah. And they gift this Rock to the new queen, you know, becoming the new queen, and they give it as if it's like the most symbolic thing, which I think is the greatest metaphor for cultural interaction when you don't do your research, because it's, you know, I understand that people get upset when people talk about like cultural appropriation, because a lot of people don't really understand what it is. This is cultural appropriation. Like, and it's done in the nicest way. There is no malice in these bugs. They are genuinely trying to do something that they think is meaningful to this culture. But they didn't actually do the work to be like, hey, why did you, is that like Rock thing, like an ant thing or like a you thing or, you know, what? And so they come off looking kind of ridiculous and kind of ignorant.
Yeah.
Because they didn't bother to look into, is this really a tradition? Is this a joke? Is this a, you know?
Yeah.
So I like that. I think that's a much better metaphor than a lot of the ones I've seen for what cultural appropriation is. It's just kind of misunderstanding and not, you know, even when you try to do it with respect, maybe do it with a little bit of research.
Yeah. And they kind of ask Flick to come with them, you know, join the circus with us. But nah, Flick has a new job. He's him and now the new queen are kind of a thing. He has to stick by his lady.
And also, he has transformed the entire ant society. They're now harvesting food using his inventions, and it's all very, you know, they've worked out the bugs in the problem, you know, the little problems in the inventions.
Even using them to create fireworks.
Yeah, I love that idea of launching the stalks into the air and the seeds raining down as fireworks. That's really cool. You know, and so the movie ends on a high note, and without the, you know, I'm going to get all capitalism metaphor here for a second, strap in, but we now see that without the exploitation of the grasshoppers, the ants are kind of living a life of not total leisure, but at the beginning of the movie, all we see is them like in drudgery. Mm-hmm. You know, that is all they do. All they do is work. But at the end, it's like a very, you know, we've technologically advanced. We're able to take enough food for ourselves, but we don't actually see them like strip mining the island for like.
Yeah, the island is a lot more greener at this end of the movie than it was at the beginning of the movie.
Because they have been picking it clean every single season to feed both the grasshoppers and themselves. But when it's just their society, they can manage a lot better their own resources.
Yeah.
So I love the whole, and again, it's not specifically pointed at. It's not like there's nobody coming up on screen and being like, now without the grasshoppers, we can, you know, share labor more equitably and, you know, manage resources. But it's there.
Yeah. Cue the Randy Newman song!
Which I had forgotten was in this movie. That there was a Randy Newman song at the end of it. And boy, is this the most on-the-nose Randy Newman song ever. Like, it's just full of, like...
This is early Pixar. There's going to be a Randy Newman song in it.
Well, yeah, but this song, and we've talked about this before, you know, with Princess's Bride. I think Randy Newman is actually a good songwriter until he starts working with Pixar and /Disney. And this one is probably the, like, creme de la creme of bad Randy Newman songs for Disney. Yeah. Because all it is like, there was a bug. Nobody cared about that bug. And then he, like, it's just the story of
left
the movie.
Left foot, right foot.
It is that Family Guy joke writ large. It is so bad and so on the nose. It's just like somebody was like, hey, Randy, we got a story about a bug, and nobody cares about him. And then he goes and gets some warriors. And then Randy just, like, transcribed everything they said in this elevator pitch and just put a tune behind it. It is an awful song. I'm sorry. I do like Randy Newman, but it just...
Yeah. And we have something that starts in this movie that went for a while in this Pixar movies. The outtakes. The fake outtakes.
Quote unquote. Yeah, the fake outtakes.
Yeah, this was the first movie to have the outtakes. This, Toy Story 2, Monsters, Inc. I think Cars was the last one to have the outtakes.
I don't remember.
Because I know they didn't have it for The Incredibles. They didn't have it for... Did they have it for Ratatouille? I don't think they had it in Finding Nemo.
No, I do not believe they had it in Finding Nemo.
So yeah, this, but it was for a while there was the tradition of the fake outtakes. Some of them were probably real, and they animated them, but some of them were clearly done in the character.
Yeah, oh, did I knock the camera over? Oh, did, you know.
Yeah.
I
got berry juice actually in my eye! We need to stop filming!
Yeah. I think, of course, there is the one funny one out of all these. Flick grabbing the dandelion seed and screaming, to infinity and beyond! Because, you know.
He had to. It's a Pixar movie.
It's right there, yeah.
That's like, again, considering the same time frame, someone jumping on a railing and saying, I'm the king of the world!
Yeah. So this is, and man, boy, if you weren't alive when Toy Story came out, you do not understand how ubiquitous those jokes were.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's wrap this up.
Yeah. So let's talk about this movie. Let's give our final thoughts of this movie. I like this movie. I appreciate this was not my favorite Pixar movie when I first saw it, and for a long while it was not. It was definitely towards the bottom of my Pixar hierarchy. But now rewatching it, especially in the modern time with the time we live in, this movie is really good.
Yeah, and we occasionally find a movie in these rewatches that at the time people did not pay much attention to, and we're like, ooh, no, you need to go back and rewatch this. Go back and rewatch this film.
Yeah.
This movie holds up in almost every way. I'm not thrilled with the way the Francis joke, quote unquote, starts off.
Or even the Heimlich.
The Heimlich thing I could have just done without. But overall, the themes, the messages, the morals that they're teaching, the way they teach them, the jokes. I mean, most of the jokes land still.
Yeah.
Some of them are corny, you know, bug puns, but they're still funny. This film is a hidden gem that I think a lot of people have overlooked. If you haven't seen it since it came out, roughly, go back and watch it now, because I think as an adult, it hits a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Especially right now. And if you're looking, if you've got kids, and you're looking for some way to sort of explain to them that they might understand what's going on now, I think you could do worse than this film.
You could. It's definitely better than Zootopia.
Yeah, do not show them Zootopia. Show them this one instead. If you're going to do it with a Disney film. I think this is definitely the best at dealing with these social issues.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Princess and the Frog was a bad movie, of course. Mm-hmm. But it unfortunately kind of kept the racial aspect slightly more in the background than I wish it did. And like I said, I'm not sure they really intended for Bug's Life to really be an overly explicit racism metaphor. But it is kind of a general oppression and exploitation metaphor that really works a lot better than what Zootopia tried to do.
Yeah. And, you know, the idea of oppressed people fighting it back, it is an old trope in fantasy.
And how to be an ally to those oppressed people.
Yeah.
If you are not black and you are looking at this situation right now and wondering how to deal with this and how to be an ally to black people, you could do a lot worse than these, you know, circus bugs as a kind of guiding theme there, because, you know, they didn't come in and take over. They didn't show up and tell the ants, hey, listen to us, we know how to defeat.
They sat and listened
side by side and let the ants lead the way, and they were just there. They weren't going to leave. They could have left. The grasshoppers didn't want them. They could have turned away, and they didn't. They stood there, and they locked arms with the ants, and they helped fight. So that's what you got to do if you are not the person targeted in any particular, you know, social movement that might be going on right now. Stand side by side and lock arms with the people who are, and just be like, hey, I'm going to be here. Whatever happens.
Yeah. I will be by your side.
Yeah.
No matter what happens, I'm going to be by your side.
Yeah. To borrow a line from Frozen 2, I'm here. What do you need?
Yeah.
So, yeah, show this one to your kids. Talk about it, though. Talk. Yeah. Don't just show it to them and then be, ask them, you know, why were the grasshoppers the bad guy? Why were the ants the good guy? You know, what was going on here? Because they understand more than you give them credit for, I guarantee it.
Like I said with Zootopia, watch this movie, start the conversation, have the conversation. It might be rough to have it, but have it anyway, that your kids will understand. Trust me.
And know that if you have non-black children, know that their black peers are going through, you know, they don't have the choice of just sitting down and talking about this theoretically. So the very least you can do for them is to teach your kids what they're going through as best you can.
Yeah. Like we said before, we can't even pretend to know what the black community is going through. All we can do is try to understand it by listening. That's all you have to do is just listen to what they're saying, listen to their life. But let's talk about one more thing about this movie. Does this movie have magic? I'm going to say big fat yes.
Absolutely.
This is definitely the movie, even without anything that's going on right now, I would consider this movie a classic. This is truly, definitely did not get the love it needed. This definitely deserves love now. And it did actually get some love from Disney. There was an entire section of their park called Bugs Land, which was all about this movie. At a California Adventure. Sadly, it no longer exists because that location is now going to be Avengers Campus. So Tony Stark kicked out all the bugs. Sorry, Bugs. Sorry, Bugs. We already have one Ant-Man. We don't need the rest of you.
So yeah, go watch this film. It's a really good, and despite the fact that it does have some weighty themes in the background, it doesn't leave you feeling bad. Like, I felt really good after finishing this rewatch.
Yeah.
Very uplifting film. Very funny. You know, the animation doesn't hold up as well in places, but you can forgive it. It's 22 years old.
Yeah.
So.
It's like going back and watching the first Shrek movie.
It's like going back and watching the original King Kong, technologically speaking.
Yeah.
I mean, like, none of those effects hold up now, but at the time, that was impressive. So.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, Bugs Life, good movie. Definitely. I definitely have a new appreciation for this movie now.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's move on to what we're going to be doing next week. Next week, we are going to do a movie that was requested by our good friend Luke Ski about a month ago before all this stuff happened. We are going to be talking about Who Framed Roger Rabbit. We're going to get back on schedule with this one.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to this one. We've been talking about doing it since we started the show. So, yeah, join us next week. We will be talking about the mashup we never thought would happen.
And never happened again.
And never happened again to this point. But as soon as Disney owns Warner Brothers as well, it'll probably happen all the time.
All media will eventually become Disney. So right. Tune in next week for Roger Rabbit. And check us out at the usual places, Spotify, iTunes, Facebook, Twitter. And we will talk to you guys next week. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Rewatching the Magic. We invite you to keep the magic going by joining the conversation online. Find us on Facebook at Rewatching the Magic, on Twitter at Rewatch the Magic, and of course, find all new episodes at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com. Until next time, remember, the magic is for everyone. It only stops if you let it.